Why don't we just, rather than do, let me open the show then with this really beautiful Juneteenth kind of musical, whatever, piece by Sojourner Kincaid Roll. And maybe it'll set our tone, set our mood here a little bit. Is that okay?
Okay, and I will not be able to be on the show next week because I have a stress test.
Okay, all right. Well, then I'll have to come up with some poems. let me see here. Let me get Annie John. Why is it not? Hold on a second here. All right, here we go.
General Granger brought the news to Galveston. The war is over. President Lincoln has decreed, the Emancipation Proclamation declares, all who live in bondage here shall from now until be free. After 300 years of forced labor, descendants of Africa picked up their souls, all that they owned, leaving shackles where they fell on the ground, headed for the nearest resting place. Some went no further than the shack out back, oft only a shed, hard ground for a bed. Hard labor, no pay, but the will to survive. Though they couldn't call it their own, they still declared, "This is my home." Some went to the nearest place of the Lord, to some hollow place in the brush, or to a clearing in a grove, where folk gathered neath a still-standing tree and sang, "Thank you, Jesus, for delivering me." Some ran as far as they could go, into the surface of the man on the laboring land, working for a pittance in a little plot of space, much like they did as a slave. Some made a beeline for the nearest saloon, singing a song, picking a tune, toasting the union and lady luck, setting the flow, dancing the jig and the buck, patting themselves on their whip-scarred backs, carousing from night into day. Some went the way of the river, following the Rio Grande or swimming the upflowing Mississippi, hastening to get as far as they could, thrusting their futures into sanctuary and unknown friendless territory. Some kept running like a stone on a hill, never to grasp a firm place to rest. Some even went to the promised land. Wherever they went, alone or abreast, at the end of their journey they cried, "I've done my best." Every year in the Lone Star State and in towns from sea to sea, sons and daughters of the ones who were held celebrate the time when their forebears got the news the war was over, all men were free. They will always remember, they will never forget Juneteenth, when their forebears could shout, "Free at last, hallelujah, I'm free."
Well, welcome to the Poetry Show, and with my good friend and co-host Janet Harrison, and a mentor for poetry for me. And we're featuring today some poetry in the spirit of Juneteenth from Langston Hughes and Robert Hayden. Do you want to start with the Weary Blues, Janet, or you want me to?
Why don't I start with the Weary Blues and then you read Frederick Douglass?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, let me open it up. Okay, Langston Hughes was a poet. He wrote in the early part of the 1900s. He was part of what was known as the Harlem Renaissance, which was a real blossoming of art among African Americans in Harlem, and he was probably, in my opinion, the best of them. And this is the Weary Blues he used a lot when people were writing these really obscure, like T.S. Eliot were writing these really obscure poems. He wrote these very clear poems about the African American experience. And this is called The Weary Blues. Droning, a drowsy, excuse me, let me start over again. It went away. Droning a drowsy syncopated tune, rocking back and forth to a mellow croon, I heard a Negro play down on Lenox Avenue the other night by the pale, dull pallor of an old gas light. He did a lazy sway. He did a lazy sway to the tune of those weary blues. With his ebony hands on each ivory key, he made that poor piano moan with melody. Oh, blues. Swaying to and fro on his rickety stool, he played that sad, raggedy tune like a musical fool. Sweet blues, coming from a black man's soul. Oh, blues. In a deep song voice with a melancholy tone, I heard that Negro sing that old piano moan. Ain't got nobody in all this world. Ain't got nobody but myself. I'm going to quit to my frowning, and I'm going to put my troubles on the shelf. Thump, thump, thump went his foot on the floor. He played a few chords, and he sang some more. I got the weary blues, and I can't be satisfied. Got the weary blues, and can't be satisfied. Ain't happy no more, and I wish that I had died. And far into the night he crooned that tune. The stars went out, and so did the moon. The singer stopped playing and went to bed, while the weary blues echoed through his head. He slept like a rock, or a man that's dead.
Wow. I love that close. Wow. He slept like a rock or a man that was dead. That's great. Langston Hughes had a rhythm to a lot of his poetry. That's one, you know, you can hear the song. It's like a blues song a little bit. And he had a very famous poem, of course, America Was Never America to Me, or America May Become America for Me. I can't remember the exact. And I remember when I heard, a relative of Langston Hughes, do that poem once dramatically in front of a big crowd. I remember that here and then. It was like I could almost hear the music he had been listening to when he was writing that. So I love that aspect of Langston Hughes' poetry. You can actually sort of recite it to yourself as you're walking down the road like you would a tune. The next poem I think we're going to take on here is one by Robert Hayden called Frederick Douglass. Robert Hayden was born in 1913, about a year before my dad, actually. But his born name was Asa Bundy Sheffy. And he was born in a poor family in the Paradise Valley neighborhood of Detroit. Not quite sure what part of Detroit that's in. And he had an exceptionally emotional and traumatic childhood and was raised mostly by foster parents. But due to extreme nearsightedness, he said, he turned to books rather than sports in his childhood. And after graduating from high school in 32, he attended Detroit City College, now Wayne State University, and earned a graduate degree in English Literature from the University of Michigan. As a teaching fellow, he was the first black faculty member in Michigan's English department. He eventually became the first African-American to be appointed as consultant to poetry to the Library of Congress. So this poem, Frederick Douglass, of course, is as close to the 19th century liberator or Dr. King as anyone. If you're not familiar with his biography, I recommend you read his autobiography. It's one of the best historical memoirs of our country. Anyway, this is called Frederick Douglass. When it is finally ours, this freedom, this liberty, this beautiful and terrible thing, needful to man as air, usable as earth, when it belongs at last to all, when it is truly instinct, brain matter, diastole, systole, reflex action, when it is finally won, when it is more than the gaudy mumbo-jumbo of politicians, this man, this Douglass, this former slave, this Negro beaten to his knees, exiled, visioning a world where none is lonely, none hunted, alien, this man superb in love and logic, this man shall be remembered. Oh, not with statues rhetoric, not with legends and poems and wreaths of bronze alone, but with the lives grown out of his life, the lives fleshing his dream of the beautiful and needful thing. That's Robert Hayden. That's from the collected poems of Robert Hayden, by the way, edited by Frederick Gasher. We're reading it from the Poetry Foundation's website, which is poetryfoundation.org, a great repository of American poems.
And one of the things that's remarkable about this poem is how he starts and he maintains the tension. He starts with that beautiful opening, you know, when it is finally ours, this freedom, this liberty, this beautiful and needful and terrible thing, needful to man as air. And then he goes on and it the sentence just goes on and on until you get to Frederick Douglass.
Right.
You don't get to Frederick Douglass until past the middle of the poem.
Yeah, I know.
So there's this tremendous tension that's set up. You know, he's saying when, you know, and then, you know, right. We finally get to then.
I'm Frederick Douglass, yeah.
And that beautiful line when he describes Frederick Douglass as suburban love and logic. I thought that was just gorgeous.
Right. You know, it's, yeah, I've read some transcriptions of his speeches, which had a slightly different tone than when he was writing. Well, of course. He had a method of delivery, which was not really, what do they call it? You know, when someone's, like in a poem, like the beginning of Robert Hayden's poem there, you could see that you could open a political speech with those phrases, right? You know,
yes.
Heading down. But apparently he had a much more kind of like a lawyerly presentation style, you know, to make it, you know, irrefutable logic that, you know, such and such and such and such is the thing that's going to happen. I remember in particular conversation, debate, whatever he was having with fellow abolitionists immediately after the Civil War, during the early days of Reconstruction, or maybe the just later than early days, when Andrew Johnson was president and he started to pull back from Reconstruction in the South. And a number of his you know, contemporaries in the liberation movement and among African American fraternal organizations, which were, you know, very widespread in the South. He had a very interesting remark. He says, well, there's those of us who think that we should leave the Republican Party because it's become corrupt. And instead, he says, but the Republican Party is like a ship at sea, and it's the only ship in sight. And so that if you're if you're going to leave the Republican Party, you know, there's nothing out there but the imponderable ocean. Anyway, so that's what happened. I just love that. Some interference. Yeah. Okay. So what's next?
What's next, I think, is Mother to Son, which is probably my favorite Langston Hughes poem, which is saying a lot because I like Langston Hughes a lot. And I have to pull it up here. Excuse me a moment. But this is a poem where a mother is talking to it, just like the title, it's written in the mother's voice, and she's talking to her son. And here it is. We're reading again from the Poetry Foundation website, and this would be found in Langston Hughes, Selected Poems of Langston Hughes. Well, son, I'll tell you. Life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it, and splinters, and boards torn up, and places with no carpet on the floor. Bare. But all the time, I's been climbing on, and reaching landings, and turning corners, and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on them steps, 'cause you finds it's kinda hard. Don't you fall now. For I's still going, honey. I's still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
Right. Wow.
And you know, I think that's an important message for our times.
You know, I had never, before you sent that to me, I had never read that poem before. And, yeah, that's, you know, he has a, he was very well, he was celebrated all over the world, you know, and especially in the left wing movements and stuff, and but he sometimes shied from some of the associations, like, you know, everybody wanted him to join their organization, and he kind of stood apart, but he had a great reputation. He has like song. It's like you could read his poems and they could stay with you, you know, for a long time. What do you have when you think about Langston Hughes, and the sort of there was the other African American writers of the 30s and 40s that you know, came to the fore. I mean, Ralph Ellison, you know, with his novels, yeah. Right? And
the Invisible Man still stands up.
Does. You know, I think that, and when we opened the show there with the I think that's Sojourner Kincaid Roll wrote that that little piece about Juneteenth 2 or 3 years ago. It's not from this year, but and of course it comes with a video. Have you seen the video that comes with it?
No.
Oh, I'll send it to you. It's a beautiful video that is accompanying, you know, the poem. And I just broke down in tears the first time I heard it. I still almost tear up when I hear it, you know, the parts of it, especially the parts about you know, Muhammad Ali, you know, going all over the world to find himself and to make his self-discovery a national phenomenon, you know, and the I remember at the memorial they did for him before he died, he was there, and you know, the embrace of a guy like Howard Cosell. It was one of the most beautiful moments I'd ever seen. And so I'm so glad that she incorporated that into her poem. These are emotional poems, aren't they?
Yes. And mother to son opened so conversationally, so gently. Well, son, I'll tell you now. So you know that it's a mother talking to her son, you know.
Right.
And then that beautiful image, life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
Yep.
And it's not written, and it's written in the language that a uneducated, very strong black woman might use. You know, it's not life hasn't been, it's life ain't been.
Right, right.
That's for true. Me, no crystal stair. But the beautiful image, you know, of a crystal stair. And then she goes, you know, it has tacks in it and splinters and boards torn out and places with no carpet on the floor. And then that single line, bare. You know, everything's stripped. You can just get the feeling of the struggle. But right. All the time, I've been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. And then that beautiful close. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find it's kinder hard. Don't you fall now. For I's still going, honey. I's still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair. That beautiful determination just captures the experience.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it's, you know, the liberation struggle of African-American people is, that describes it, you know, to keep rising, even though the stairs are loaded, some of them are missing, and the rest are tearing your feet up. So, well, I think we have... Do we have another poem we want to do? We have time.
I hadn't really thought those were the ones that I thought were most important, unless you want to go do that your alternative poem about Alabama, which was just a very lyrical poem.
Well, let me see if I make sure I have it. Yeah, Daybreak in Alabama. Let's do that one. We can close with that one. That sounds good. Okay. This was also by Langston Hughes. You want me to read it or you want to read it?
Would you read it, please?
Yeah, sure. Okay. When I get to be a colored composer, I'm going to write me some music about daybreak in Alabama. And I'm going to put the prettiest songs in it. Rising out of the ground like a swamp mist, and falling out of heaven like soft dew. I'm going to put some tall trees in it, and the scent of pine needles, and the smell of red clay after rain, and long rednecks and poppy-colored faces, and big brown arms, and the field daisy eyes of black and white, black, white, black people. And I'm going to put white hands and black hands and brown and yellow hands and red clay earth hands in it, touching everybody with kind fingers, touching each other, natural as dew. In that dawn of music, when I get to be a colored composer and write about daybreak in Alabama.
Which is a lyrical side of, again, you hear the rhythms and the music in his work.
Yeah, it's really, well, I think, you know, poems for centuries, right, before we had writing implements like the composers of whatever became the Iliad and the Odyssey, And you pass down, you know, poetry and in song or in things that people remember to tell, you know, or oral traditions of various kinds, probably some of them, you know, incorporated into rituals at various times. And you, and that tradition of, you know, passing on culture in song, you know, in that, I think that that's a, we lose some of that in the T.S. Eliot kind of poetry, right? We lose a lot of it in there. I'm not going to put down Eliot. You know, he had some beautiful poems and obviously very learned poems, but and that was a big thing of his generation, I think, or that phase in English poetry. But, you know, I don't repeat... well, probably a couple of lines from an Eliot poem I used to say to myself periodically, but typically no. But with these poems, yeah, I remember them and their words come back. And I think that helps us treasure the vision and values that they are trying to keep. Anyway, are we good for today, you think?
I think so. I think, though I would suggest, one of the things I was thinking about doing with the show is suggesting a writing exercise to people at the end of it.
And wow.
Having done this Langston Hughes, my suggestion for a writing episode exercise would be to take a piece of music that you love, whether it has words or not, and just play it, you know, a few times, and then just write down what starts coming to you and try and keep some of the rhythm of the music in your work.
That's a great exercise, Janet. You know, matter of fact, I'm going to try that today. I'm going to try it. That's a very great exercise. Well, thank you so much. I think that the Langston Hughes and Robert Hayden, which we sort of came to me by association, are just, you know, great tributes to the spirit of Juneteenth. And I hope we can, you know, spread the word a little bit. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. You can hit our podcast, but podcasts.enlightenradio, all one word, .org. podcast.enlightenradio.org, and you'll see it up there. You can also go to our blog site, www.enlightenradio.org, and you know, the player is there, and we're on. I've been on pretty much 24/7 here for the last 3 weeks, and since I got all my automation going, so I hope you guys can enjoy it. Take care. It's late, but everything comes next.